Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Ottawa's queer media. My name is Luke Smith, and what a fantastic show we have lined up for you today. We are really excited. We were actually able to secure an interview with the Canadian Cancer Society. Now, first up, we have an interview with Monica Bennett talking about the smoke cessation program. Now, of course, as many folks know, there are a lot of GLPT smokers out there. Let's talk about some reasons why, and a lot of reasons how we can help, how we can move away from this, how we can kind of work together and create a sense of community to help quit. Like Monica says, don't quit quitting. That is absolutely, utterly important. And later in the show, we also have Susan Flynn from Screening, the Get Screened program. And to be honest, it is quite startling in many ways how many cancers disproportionately affect the GLPT community, and also how certain communities like the trans community may not realize that they are at risk of certain cancers above and beyond the usual percentages. So check it out. Definitely worth listening to that. Before our interview with Monica, though, we do have a track from the Eurovision Song Contest. This is the Estonia submission from called Verona from Laura and Tom, and check it out. It has been stuck in my head since first hearing it about a week ago. Now, the reason why we bring this particular song up is because the Eurovision is looking a little bit in crisis. Now, of course, the finals aren't until May and later than that, but we certainly are keeping an eye on it, and hopefully we'll see some other great tracks such as this make its way out. Don't forget that Can Queer will be doing coverage of the Eurovision Song Contest, so we certainly have that to look forward to. And but now we have the submission from Estonia.
Sleeping all alone, you wake up with a bottle in your hands. No sound, no serenade, cause we both know we lost our game.
This is is Luke with Can Queer calling. How are you? So you're with the Smokers Helpline.
That's right.
The Canadian Cancer Society. What made you get involved with that?
What made me get involved with the Cancer Society? Well, it's the Canadian Cancer Society Smokers Helpline. And, you know, funnily enough, I didn't think I'd want to because it isn't, you know, it's not rad enough. But then I got here and found out what the amazing work that we do, the amazing work that we do to save people's lives and to prevent things from, prevent people from getting cancer in the first place. I'm doing it by the advocacy work that we do, the support work that we do, and the research that we do.
It's truly incredible work, and I know a lot of folks who get touched by it, and definitely there's a lot of support out there. The reason why we kind of want to do this episode is because for some reasons, you know, in the gay, bi, lesbian, trans, genderqueer, what have you community, rates of certain cancers seem to be much higher.
Well, what I see, because I work in tobacco control, what I see is that there's higher rates of smoking in the LGBTQ community, and there's some really strong reasons for that, some really obvious reasons for that. And of course, if you smoke, you're far more likely to get cancer and to get all kinds of other tobacco-related diseases. And the reasons for that are not unlike the reasons for any marginalized community, because the less money that you make, the less education you have, the lower socioeconomic status you have, the more stress you have, the more likely you are to smoke. And, you know, when you're a marginalized community, you're also, well, for a number of reasons, you, for one, don't access healthcare as readily. And that's especially true for queer folks because we're not so comfortable going to a doctor and talking to about our healthcare because it may or may not, often is not safe and not a safe place to go. And if you don't go to your doctor, you're less likely to be asked about your tobacco use. Well, this would be an intuitive answer. It's not anything I've seen from the research, but intuitively, I think that it's can be harder to be bi. I mean, it's not fair to compare oppressions. It's not. But we know that bisexual people are more likely to be, you know, to get it from both sides. Like you're not straight enough for your straight friends, and you're not queer enough for your queer friends. And so there's a different kind of stress that goes with that kind of identity. So I wonder if that's not a piece of it. It's harder to identify with a particular community, and if you don't have a strong sense of identity, you're probably more likely to experience stress and social isolation, low self-esteem, and those factors all lead to using tobacco.
Mm-hmm. Now I know that you know, you're absolutely right, and our show has kind of explored the issue of bi erasure. The idea of kind of undermining and making light or even making you invisible by folks. And it makes it very difficult for folks to access our resources within either community as a result. Which makes me think if there's this added layer, when we look at what's happening in the States, there was a study in the States that found that, you know, GLBT people were actually less likely to call.
Well, that's two questions, and that's okay. So we do outreach. We've worked with Rainbow Health Ontario, for example, to do some campaigning for the LGBTQ community in particular. There's other folks it's not just Smokers Helpline, but our other tobacco control partners who are looking to reach out to the LGBT community around smoking cessation, because we know that there's higher rates there. So we're making strides in that direction. And at our end, when you're actually talking to a quit coach, I think that people can feel quite comfortable talking to these folks because some of them are queer. They won't tell you that. I wouldn't suggest you ask it, because in the same way you wouldn't ask anybody, really. So that's one piece of it. But also they've all received training and all of our documentation and any of the protocols that we use when we're conducting, when we're doing our what we call intervention. It doesn't feel it, that's the technical word for it. Actually, when you're talking to a quit coach, it sounds very much and feels very much like a conversation. It's not, you know, please answer A, B, C, D. It's really a conversation that you're having. But it's based in evidence, and the evidence informs the protocols we've developed, and they're all very queer friendly, I would say. That's interesting. What we're seeing, like overall, we're seeing that there people start smoking. It used to be that like the average age of initiation was 12 or 13 years old, which is pretty young. And for those of us old enough to remember, that's when you would start looking at, you know, you'd sneak some smokes from your family and try it out, you know, behind the building kind of stuff. But now what we're seeing is people are starting more likely when they either enter the workforce, like after the age of 18, when they're entering the workforce for the first time, or they're going into post-secondary education. But either way, it's related to sort of getting, it's related to becoming acclimatized and trying to fit into your environment. So if you go into a new job after the age, like your first job at the age of 18, it's probably a job, an entry-level position. That is, it's probably retail or hospitality, or it's low skills, or it's outdoor work. And all of those jobs, all those occupations, you're far more likely to be smoking because when you can, that's how you get a break, or that you're working outside so you can smoke. And so when you start in that job, you start to do what your peers do. And the same thing goes when you're into post-secondary education. It's a stressful environment. You're trying to figure out how to make things work. And so you start smoking because your friends are smoking. So it's a very interesting phenomenon that we've seen in the last probably 5 years or so.
So you mentioned fitting into an environment. Usually if one gay guy is smoking, the whole household would. Also at gay bars, which is less common now because certain hookup apps, but usually, you know, the music is so loud that you would only really get to know each other if you went out and had a smoke, and that's
exactly
where the relationship building was happening. So it was a very unhealthy conduit to kind of making connections in gay spaces. I think that is
well, I hope we are seeing less of that, but that is very much describes what smoking initiation looks like. You're doing it because you're young and you're trying to form your identity, and you're just doing what other folks are saying. Because most people don't start smoking once they're in their 30s and 40s. They're doing it while they're developing their identity. And I have to say here too that it's important that we don't blame each other here. Mm-hmm. There is also a piece that the tobacco industry has to take responsibility for, because they have targeted many different marginalized, vulnerable communities, including the LGBT community. They advertise in really subtle and not so subtle ways. They know where we live. They know where we party, and there's bars in Toronto that have big advertising. It's all paid, like the whole place looks like a cigarette package. I'm modifying it, but you get my idea. Because that's they know that you're vulnerable, that they know that you're more susceptible to peer pressure, and they know that that nicotine is a highly addictive product, and they want to get you hooked so that they have a customer for life. They're not interested in supporting your identity. They're interested in taking your money.
For folks listening and they're thinking, well, you know, I'm going to go into university, or I'm moving into an apartment with some of the gay folks, what can I do whilst that socializing is happening, which isn't smoking? You know, what's an alternative?
Wow, what's an alternative? Just take stock in who you are and what, you know, I think there's a conversation you have with yourself and with other people about who you are and who you want to be. And so you can reinforce those messages for yourself when you are experiencing that pressure. And find other things to do. You can drink. It's the same thing we say when you're about drinking, right? You can drink a mocktail. You can drink water rather than drinking alcohol. Instead of having a cigarette, you can go out with your friends, because sometimes, I know you don't sound as old as me, but I remember when I was in high school, it was the smokers who were way more fun than anybody else. And so you wanted to be with them, but you didn't want to smoke. And so, you know, you can go out and have fun, but you don't have to smoke. And it's about making a choice ahead of time, because trying to make that decision in the heat of the moment, so to speak, is more difficult to do.
I think you're right. Having a plan going ahead is certainly important. I remember I grew up in the UK, and you're absolutely right. The people who seem to be having the most devilish fun with usually the group of smokers.
And there's a piece of that is about, you know, the rebelliousness that goes with it. Like, you know, that's why people smoke, partly because there's something about independence or rebellion that goes with smoking. There's something sexy about smoking, and that's certainly from the tobacco. That's because it's really like smoke coming out of your mouth when you think about it is not all that sexy, but the advertising has made us think it's sexy. There's it's equated with masculinity as well, and this is like sometimes it's just thought of as part of who we are, right? And so if there's that piece to it as well. Those are all myths, of course, but it's true. But it's true that they exist.
I mean, I'm not a purveyor of gentleman cinema, but I am told that certain pornographies heavily feature smoking in kind of gay.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. There's like a I am not either, but I mean it's you can, you know, people can Google it if they want to, but there's a piece that goes with that. Yeah, absolutely. So smoking makes everything, if you're HIV positive, it makes everything worse. And it's not just if you're HIV positive, if you have any kind of a chronic illness, it will. If you have MS, it makes everything worse. If you have any disease. The other piece of it is that, as we know, HIV is a chronic disease, and you will, if you die of it, will be a long, long time from now that you will die of it. And so the reality is that people with HIV are, because there's people with HIV are far more are likely to smoke. And so what we know is those people are far more likely to die of a tobacco related disease than their HIV. And so all the more important, like that's what all the more important for those folks to be treated for their tobacco dependence. And we often say, oh, it's like, oh, well, you know, it's their last pleasure, or we'll get to it when, pardon me, we'll get to it whenever, because there's more pressing issues right now. But really, that's what's going to kill them. Tobacco will kill them.
Absolutely. And I think that's important that we kind of take a bit of a firm line there, because sometimes smoking gets trivialized. And I think that's very dangerous, because, of course, it does have a severe impact on health.
Yeah, and we look at it, like, if you look at it compared to other addictions, it doesn't, because nicotine addiction doesn't doesn't severely impact your state of consciousness, not the way drugs or alcohol do, then there aren't the consequences of misusing it aren't as severe. But the consequences that you are certainly there. They're just long-term consequences. And when you're young, when you're in an adolescent and a young adult in particular, you're not cognitively, you're not able to futurize as well as you will be when you're an adult. And so you're not able to necessarily make better, as good choices for yourself, because you're not able to futurize, not able to say, oh, that's going to get me into trouble down the line, right? And so that's when people start smoking. And that's when the tobacco industry is targeting. They're targeting young people.
And you mentioned right at the top of the show there, you know, that LGBT folks are often more either unemployed or underemployed.
They may be, yes.
To be more substantially likely to be homeless. So that I mention this because that not being able to futurize the consequences. If you're in a desperate situation or in kind of that scenario, it must be very difficult to kind of weigh up that future consequence with the, you know, current situation.
And also, since when you get that hit of nicotine, you take a puff, 7 to 10 seconds to go from inhaling to your brain, you get a hit of nicotine, the nicotine releases dopamine, you get a feel-good response, right? It goes to that reward pathway the way all addictive substances do. And so if you're in that situation, like you're looking for your next meal, you're looking for a job, you're like whatever it is, you're stressed, and that hit of nicotine makes you feel good. And so it's harder to give it up, because in the short term you can say, this is making me feel good now so that I can do, so I can focus on what, you know, on the longer term, right? One of the things we say is, whatever you do, don't quit quitting, because people generally have to quit a number of times before they're successful, because it is such a tenacious addiction. Nicotine is actually quite a benign substance. It just happens to be one of the most addictive substances there is, but nicotine itself isn't harmful. It's tobacco and tobacco smoke that are harmful. And so it can be very difficult to quit, but don't quit quitting, because you have to quit a number of times before you're successful. And every time you quit, you learn something from that. You learn learn that, oh, I was, you know, I had a fight with my sisters, so, and I was all stressed out, so I had a cigarette. And so next time, you'll think about that. You'll think, okay, I was stressed out because I'm upset, so what am I going to do differently this time? And it's just one cigarette you're giving up, but that's one cigarette. And then you won't do it again and again, and you'll take those learnings to every one of your quit attempts until you're successful. And we also suggest that people get support. We know that when you have support, you're twice as likely to be successful. And if you add medications on top of that, and I mean like over-the-counter medications like nicotine replacement, if you add that on top, then you're 3 to 4 times more likely to be successful. And if you call Smokers Helpline, you get that support. And we can tell you where you can get free nicotine replacement therapy. And so you put all those things together and you're well on your way to being successful. The other piece is incentives. Like, you got to think about what, you know, why you're going to quit. An incentive piece for us, one of the incentives that we're offering is something called a first week challenge. So you quit smoking for the first 7 days of any month. You know, you register for this contest. If we pull your name, then you win $500.
Oh, wow.
It's like, I know, it's like you can't lose. Like, why would you not, right? And it's only 7 days. You don't have to be quit forever. You have to quit for 7 days. And we pull your name, you get $500. And you can enter, and if we don't pull your name, then you can enter 3 times, and you can still do it. So, again, we're trying to get people to keep quitting. And it's one of the ways you can do it. And I should also say that the number to reach us is on your cigarette pack.
Oh, really?
So when you buy cigarettes and you have those, like the pictures, those health warning labels on it, well, at the same time they put those warnings on it, they also put a 1-800 number on it. And from there you can just call that number and it'll take you to the correct, to the helpline that's going to assist you in your province. So if you call from Alberta, it sends you to the Alberta line. If you call from Ontario, it takes you to Smokers Helpline. Well, first of all, I got to say, aren't you lucky? And I'm so happy for you that you had that experience at Relay for Life. They are pretty amazing. And two, that community piece is really important. So you can reach out and talk to our quit coaches, but you can also go online and to smokershelpline.ca, and you can talk to other people who are going through the same thing at the same time. Because even though, you know, we can help you in a certain role, sometimes there's nothing like talking to somebody who's doing the same thing at the same time. And so you can ask all kinds of questions. You can post answers. People come back, like seriously come back 2 and 3 years later, and they say, I've been quit for all this long. It's so amazing. I'm doing it. You can do it too. Because quitting smoking was that important. It was that much of an accomplishment to them. And so to get to, for people to come back that much later to tell us how wonderful it's been, we're really happy to see that. Sometimes I have to admit, when I first started this job, sometimes I would just go to that site and just read some of the stuff because it was so supportive. It was just the way that I think we should all be with each other in this world. So supportive, so encouraging. It's a really nice thing to see.
And sorry, what site was that again?
Smokershelpline.ca.
Excellent. And I hope folks will go and check it out.
Do you have any
closing thoughts or observations?
Well, you know, a couple things. One is that I also encourage people to go, we have a texting program. So you just pull out your phone, text I quit, I-Q-U-I-T, text that to 123-456. And then you're registered for a texting program that will help you quit. We'll send you tips and tools and advice and inspirational messages and links to other places that you can get more support. So that's the other place you can do.
Swim through my veins, drown me in your rain. My desire carries no shame. My will. Oh, wash me clean.
That was Wash Me Clean by Katie Lang. Of course, now we are looking at the 25th anniversary of her first major album, with Katie Lang doing a countrywide tour, spending a couple of days in Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, and of course, east to west, nearly in every province. So look it up. I'm sure Katie Lang is wherever you are listening. You can kind of see them perform live. Very exciting, very exciting. But now we're going to jump back into the next interview. This next interview is with Susan Flynn, and we're going to be talking about some of the cancer rates, but also, you know, some of the reasons why it is so incredibly important that all of our listeners, no matter if you're gay, straight, bi, or trans, you know, go and get screened. Absolutely get screened. For more information, we will be talking to Susan Flynn. Some of the questions have been removed. They were distorted. I apologize for that. But it's easy to follow. Check it out. We'll be back just after this.
Sure. So Screening Saves Lives was developed in 2013. And the program aims to address barriers that lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, and queer communities experience in getting screened for cervical, breast, and colon cancer. And so the program aims to raise awareness about the importance of screening by encouraging LGBTQ folks to speak to their friends, families, and social networks about the importance of early detection and screening. We've also developed LGBTQ-specific cancer prevention materials, like a website, posters, and postcards. And in partnership with our community offices, we organize LGBTQ-specific cancer screening opportunities and support our staff and volunteers across the province to attend LGBTQ events and raise awareness and share our resources.
another aspect of the program that we developed in response to realizing that healthcare providers are often not aware of the issues or have access to information regarding screening for LGB and particularly trans folks. We partnered with Rainbow Health Ontario to develop a training module designed for doctors and healthcare teams to help them explore screening issues and barriers and to provide culturally and clinical competent cancer screening services to their clients. So, you know, the program is about raising information, raising awareness, and addressing barriers to screening for these communities.
I think that was a really good...
Okay, so in terms of screening for cervical, breast, and colon cancer and other types of cancer, we know that the LGBTQ population faces significant barriers to achieving health outcomes. And generally, it's believed that that's the result of healthcare needs being poorly understood and healthcare institutions not being inclusive of LGBTQ needs. So, for example, LGBT folks are less likely to have a primary healthcare provider, and they're more likely to delay seeking medical care or screening because of actual or perceived discrimination. They may face barriers to screening related to sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender dysphoria. And LGBTQ communities tend to be more vulnerable to social stresses that lead to increased alcohol, tobacco, and substance use. And this can increase cancer risk. So basically, if LGBTQ folks are more likely to get to be at risk and more likely to get detected later when treatment is often more difficult and less successful. True, and there's other studies that back that up as well, Luke. And it's interesting that the reason some physicians we hear from lesbian women tell their clients that they actually don't need a pap test because they're not at risk because they are not having sex with men. And we know this isn't true. And so our recommendation here at the Canadian Cancer Society for lesbians, bi women, women who have sex with women, is to adhere to the guidelines that exist for all women across Canada and here in Ontario, which is once you reach 21 and you are sexually active, to get a pap test every 2 years. Does support that. And so for the Canadian Cancer Society, then it's very important for us to be able to reach out effectively to those communities with information about leading a healthier lifestyle, also in terms of, you know, having a comfortable relationship with your healthcare provider where you're able to identify issues at an earlier stage, and having a healthcare provider who understands what these issues and trends are. And that's why at Get Screened, we not only focus on improving information, education, and awareness to communities, but also to providing training and support to service providers so that they are more aware of these issues and provide a more welcoming and inclusive environment to their LGBT patients. It's slow to change. We are seeing a slight increase, certainly an interest in developing these resources, and that's why here at the Canadian Cancer Society, we developed the training module, which is it can be accredited, so it's part of ongoing professional development that physicians take throughout the year to help them understand how to address screening needs, particularly of their trans clients. We know that trans men and women experience additional barriers in accessing screening services, as you said, pap tests and mammograms, and that's due to lack of provider knowledge and sensitivity. Also, we have a healthcare system that's organized into male and female categories only. There may be gender dysphoria issues for trans men and women that impact their ability to seek care. And, you know, there are processes and for screening for transgender populations. So, for example, for trans men who have had their breasts removed or chest reconstruction surgery, or for trans women who have had surgery to, you know, provide them with a new cervix. So, you know, that information is out there. It's not as well researched as I think it could be or should be in the future, and we are seeing an increased interest in looking into more into the screening needs of trans men and trans women, particularly post-op trans men and trans women, and those who are taking hormones. But there's also the lack of awareness. So there are processes in effect, but service providers just don't know them because maybe they don't have trans clients, maybe they're not welcoming or inclusive of trans clients. I do think we're seeing trans communities have more agency or becoming more proactive around their healthcare and around access in a number of different areas. And I think that's we're going to see, because of that, an increase in awareness and knowledge around screening for colon, breast, and cervical cancer as well. And from experience that LGBT folks look when they go and are seeking out a new healthcare provider, they look for cues. You know, is the environment welcoming? Are there, say, LGBTQ or inclusive posters hanging up? Do the forms that they fill out not make assumption about partners, same-sex or that your partner is always of the opposite gender? Do they allow you to select your own pronoun? Different things like that are important in indicating to LGBTQ folks that this is indeed an environment that's welcoming. But, you know, it's also important for the physicians and their staff to be trained, to have cultural competency training, to understand what the barriers and concerns and fears and misperceptions in some instances that LGBT folks have when they're coming to access healthcare, and to be aware of those and to have processes in place to help address them. This will allow LGBT folks to feel more comfortable to disclose and discuss their healthcare issues and raise concerns with their healthcare practitioners, which, you know, can ultimately lead to earlier detection, earlier intervention, more education and information to help them have healthier health outcomes. Speaks to the importance of having a healthcare provider you can trust, and also that the healthcare provider is very clear about their obligation to maintain privacy and confidentiality, and also to only share information that's pertinent to whatever health issue they're looking into. And I think, you know, as well as anal cancer, another area that I think is worth mentioning, particularly when it comes to gay men, is HPV, so the human papillomavirus. So gay and bisexual men are 3 times more likely to get HPV compared with heterosexual men. And only recently has the HPV immunization, the vaccine, become available free of charge to gay, bisexual, and men who have sex with men here in Ontario. Before that, it would cost about $450 to get. So this and we're also seeing an increase among men of HPV in the throat and mouth. That's increased over the last few years and is looking to continue to increase. So raising awareness about the importance or of learning more about HPV and how you can get vaccinated against HPV or get tested for HPV is becoming more and more important. I know it's available in BC. Slowly the provinces have been moving towards providing free vaccinations for young men. Previous to that, it was just young women. And then slowly after that, they're also starting then to recognize that this is in fact an issue for gay and bisexual men in terms of increased prevalence of HPV, and recognizing the importance of providing that immunization free of charge and making sure that physicians are aware of that and are aware of these issues. We've got a catchy little campaign that was designed by our advisory committees from the communities, and we're more than happy to send those out free of charge to any healthcare provider or any organization that feels that would be important to share this message. Also to visit the website that you mentioned, which is cancer.ca/get-screened. On there, as you've probably noticed, we provide really in-depth information on what is available and what we know around specific practices around screening for trans men and trans women, pre-op, post-op, those taking hormones, that type of thing, that I think will be very helpful and informative. And we also have a Facebook page, which is, if you go to Facebook, it's LGBTQ Get Screened. But I think it's extremely important, you know, for breast, cervical, and colon cancers, and the other cancers we've talked about, but particularly with those three. There are free province-wide testing available, and there's guidelines in place. So, for example, if you're over 50 and you're at average risk, you should be getting a mammogram every 2 years, or a test for colon cancer every 2 years, regardless of your sexual orientation. And it's important to remember that the if you get screened early, for breast, colon, and cervical, treatment can be very easy, not very invasive, may not require chemo and radiation. It can be quite simple. However, for those three cancers, if they get detected late, they are invasive to treat and can be among the top cancer killers of all of the cancers. So, you know, the earlier, that's why we really want to focus on LGBT communities, because they do tend to get screened later. Therefore, the outcomes are not as good, or the impact can be more severe on their lives. And we do realize that because LGBT communities, as we discussed earlier, can have more at-risk behaviors or tend to be less likely to discuss these issues with their healthcare providers, it's extremely important for us to be able to reach out to these communities and really encourage them to find out more about getting screened, and to encourage their communities to do the same thing. Yes, you can get a requisition for a mammogram from a walk-in clinic, from a community health center, from a public health clinic, anywhere in the province. You can also call Cancer Care Ontario, have a colon cancer check line. You can call them and you can order your colon test. They will need a doctor to be able to send the results to, but they'll discuss that with you on the phone and help you find a healthcare provider if you don't have one.
Let's go into the forest and menstruate on a stick. Look, there's a drum circle. Maybe we could join in. Let's go down to the fire pit and roast some tofu dogs. Maybe some dykes in a tent will have some beer. We're lesbians in the forest. Let's go to the S&M tent and learn how to fist fuck. We can do whatever we want, cause this is a man-free zone. Except for the guys who empty the chains. We don't call them Johns. Here at the Michigan Women's Festival, we worship the goddess. We're lesbians in the forest. Why does everybody with a frightening body walk around naked? Why do women grow facial hair? Why do I have to look at that? No offense to anyone who's transitioning. Oh, fuck, there's my ex. With her new girlfriend. Buddy, you are so much hotter. You're Ellen's ex. Katie's ex. Alicia's ex. Portia's ex. The Indigo's ex. Jody's ex. My ex, ex, ex.
We're lesbians in the forest. X key score. This is a forest, same sex schmorgas. Fuck a Greek chorus. I swore this would be a dinosaur weekend. Dyke beacon, hair Mohican. I diddle a woodland fairy, whittle my woody scary. Middle of me is hairy, middle of me is dairy. Nymphs, fairies, witches, not a cock in sight. Cause sisters are doing themselves all night.
Yeah, lesbians in the forest.
And that was Carole Pope featuring Peaches with Lesbians in the Forest. Carole Pope is actually bringing together a whole bunch of GLBT performers, mainly lesbians, in a theatre production out in Toronto. So if you're in the Toronto area, getting to visit the Toronto area, of course, major airport hub for Canada, make sure you look it up and take a chance to check it out. I think it is a massive celebration of lesbian culture in Canada. Absolutely. Check it out. Very exciting. But that's about all we have time for. Have you been affected by anything that we have discussed during today's show? Don't forget to check out the Canadian Cancer Society for all of the information that you need. And please, please, please get screened, get the help. And if you smoke, there are lots and lots and lots of ways to kind of have that community and those supports that we mentioned earlier today. It's very important, and we take it incredibly seriously here at CanQueer with the team. That's all for now. We do apologize for the swearing in the song by Carole Pope, "They're Lesbians in the Forest." The F-bomb was dropped. We didn't catch it in time. Sorry about that. But moving on, we're going to go with something a little bit more calm, relaxing, some big high chords. But this is Lana Del Rey's brand new track called Love. And quite frankly, we are in love with it here at CanQueer. Lana Del Rey, obviously massive advocate to the LGBT community. Now, next week, speaking of lesbians in the forest, we'll be talking with two fantastic long-time lesbian advocates based out of Nova Scotia and Ottawa. We'll be talking about lesbian potlucks. For those not familiar, it was the go-to way of community building in the GLBT community for a long time, with some unique rules and peculiar history culture there. So it's going to be a very exciting and very fun conversation that we're going to have. Get in touch with us. Let's Talk CanQueer is on Facebook and Twitter. Any questions or comments? That's all we've got time for now. This is Lana Del Rey. See you next week.
With your vintage music coming through satellites while cruising, you're part of the past, but now you're the future. Signals crossing can get confusing. It's enough just to make you feel crazy, crazy, crazy sometimes. It's enough just to make you feel crazy. You get ready, you get all dressed up to go nowhere in particular. Back to work or the coffee shop, doesn't matter, cause it's enough.
Since one watch you could get the blues, but that don't mean that you should abuse it. Though it's enough, just don't make you go crazy, crazy, crazy. I know it's enough, just don't make you go crazy, crazy, crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy.